Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Confessions magazine. It's called He'll Pay $100,000 to Kill Me. Here's the story. The man asked me to raise my hand, and I did. Then he asked, "Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God?" "I do," I told him. "State your name." "Jocelyn Garner," I said. Then I took my seat on the witness stand. I didn't know if I'd be able to tell the whole story in a court of law. How could I explain how much I had loved my husband and how he had betrayed me? How could I explain the guilt that I felt? It was the if-onlys that made my heart ache. If only I had been older when we'd met, if only I'd had more education, and if only I'd been willing to stand up to him more often, if only I had never wished him dead, maybe things would have turned out differently. I'd been fresh out of school when I'd met Michael Garner, M.D. He'd given me my first job working in his office. I'd felt so lucky. He was so handsome and smart. Soon we were dating. He said there was no problem, but that I should just remember to call him Dr. Garner in the office. The other single women in the office were miffed at me for catching him. I chalked it up to jealousy. One woman, in particular, tried to warn me away. Evie said that she'd seen him date other assistants, and when things went badly, the assistants had always been fired. I was too much in love to worry about her dire predictions, though. Michael was a complete gentleman on our dates, taking me to fancy restaurants, dancing, and to the opera. The opera impressed me the most. I'd never done anything so elegant before. My dates with other men had mainly consisted of dinner and a movie. Of course, the other guys that I dated had never had the kind of money that Michael did. I loved going out with Michael, but I was also embarrassed because I only had one good dress, a black silk dress that I wore at formal occasions. It wasn't sexy, but it was the kind of thing that could be worn anywhere. "This is our fourth date, and it's the third time that you've worn that dress. Surely you're tired of it," Michael teased me one night. We were dining at Le Bistro, a romantic restaurant. What could I say? I didn't want to admit that I couldn't afford something new. I just smiled. I could tell that he saw my uneasiness, though. "It really doesn't matter what you wear," Michael reassured me, "but I know how to solve the problem." I looked at him quizzically, but he changed the subject and talked about work a while. At work, the next day, he called me into his office and shut the door. "For you," he said, handing me an envelope with a red bow on it. Surprised, I stared at him. "What have you done?" I asked. I took the envelope and opened it. Inside was a $500 gift certificate to a fancy department store. "I can't accept this," I said, handing it back to him. "Why not?" Michael asked. He didn't take the card back. "Because you're my boss and this is getting complicated," I told him. Then I placed the envelope on his desk. The next morning, I found a plain envelope in my office mailbox. In it was the gift card and a note. "Jocelyn, this is a gift. You don't owe me anything, Michael." "Michael," it read. I struggled with my conscience over whether or not to accept his generosity, but the truth was, I wanted new clothes. The gift card went in my purse. I decided that it wouldn't hurt to go to the store and look. As luck would have it, there was a fabulous sale, and I found some beautiful new dresses that I liked. Looking back, I realized that using the gift card was my first mistake. Maybe Michael didn't feel that I owed him anything, but I felt that I did. The problem was that I wanted nice things too much. When I wore my new blue dress, Michael complained that the earrings I'd worn with it didn't do the dress or me justice. When he picked me up in his luxury convertible the next Saturday night, he presented me with diamond earrings. He held out the box to me. "Take them. They're yours," he said. I reached for the box, then drew my hand back. It was bad enough that he had paid for the dresses. I shook my head. "I can't," I told him, sadly. Michael frowned. "You don't like them?" he asked. "Oh, no, I love them," I assured him. "I just can't accept such a lavish gift." "Can't or won't?" He looked angry. "Please, don't pressure me," I told him. Michael struggled to control himself. I wanted you to look nice," he murmured finally. He looked down at his lap like a little boy who'd been scolded. I felt awful. "What if you lend me the earrings when we go out?" I asked. Michael looked up at me and smiled. "The earrings would be safer that way," I added, thinking of my apartment, which was located in a seedier part of town. "You have a safe at your house, don't you?" "Yes, I do," he said, "and I think that's a wonderful idea. You're so smart. Take off your earrings." I did what he asked. "Now, put these on." As I lifted my hair to put on the earrings, he kissed my neck, which made me shiver. "Let me see," he commanded. I turned around and he grinned. "They look great." Michael traced my face and my ear with his finger. I shivered again when his fingers dropped dangerously close to my breast. "Thank you," I whispered. Michael kissed me then, and the kiss was long and slow. He drew back and stared at me for a moment, then cleared his throat. "We'd better get going," he said. I barely remember what show we saw that night. All I could feel was Michael's knee pressed against mine. Dinner was an elegant steak and seafood restaurant. Michael ordered lobster for us both. When we stood up to leave, I realized that I drank too much wine. "I'd better take you home," Michael said. I giggled, then nodded. He got off the highway at a different exit than mine. "Hey, this isn't my exit," I protested. "I'm taking you to my home," Michael told me. I giggled again. "How nice," I said. I'd never been to Michael's house. As we drove, the streets got narrower and narrower, and the houses were tucked behind massive shrubs. Michael turned onto a driveway and stopped in front of a huge home. It was big enough to be a hotel. Michael came around to my side of the car and helped me out. "Wow," was all he could say. Michael laughed. "Come on in, I'll make coffee." He led me toward the front door. "I don't know if I want coffee," I said. "I feel so deliciously something." Michael laughed again. "I think that you're deliciously drunk," he said, nibbling on my ear. "You wouldn't take advantage of a girl, would you?" I asked. Michael smiled, slid the key in the lock, and turned the bolt. The huge foyer led to a winding staircase that led up to the second floor. "Come into the den," he said, steering me in the right direction. Michael sheepherded me to a couch near the fireplace. After he'd made a roaring fire, he turned to me. "Coffee?" "No, thanks. Do you live here alone?" I asked. "It's just me and the housekeeper," Michael told me. "And it's her night off." "It's just so big," I said. Michael grinned ruefully. "I knew you'd be overwhelmed. That's why I wanted to bring you here." He leaned over and kissed me. I wasn't tipsy from the wine anymore, but I was drunk on his charms. Still, I asked myself what I really knew about the man. Could I trust him? He hadn't said those three magic words yet, much less the four words that would indicate that he was committed to me. I love you and will you marry me were a lot different than I want you. Michael, I don't know, I began. But I know, Michael said, planting little kisses down my neck. What do you know? I asked, pushing him away from me, but not too far. I know that I love you, Michael said, and I know that I want us to be together. Halfway there, I thought, Michael, I love you too, but I need a commitment before I take the next step, I told him. Michael smiled. What is the next step? I sighed. Now you're playing with me. He nuzzled my neck. Not playing. He kissed me gently. Michael, I protested. He laughed softly. From the moment that I met you, I knew you were the one for me. Does that satisfy you? I groaned. I wanted desperately to give in to the feelings that were engulfing me. Suddenly, Michael was caressing my body. You smell so good, he murmured. Michael, I whispered. I'll get the ring tomorrow, he whispered. But I want you now. Please say yes. Yes, I whispered before he carried me upstairs to bed. When I woke up the next morning, I had to think for a moment before I realized where I was. Michael was gone, but I heard water running somewhere. I saw my beautiful new dress on the carpet. I got out of bed, put it on, and walked toward a door. Michael, I called hesitantly. You're awake, Michael asked as the water continued to run in the shower. I forgot to set the alarm. Look, there's another bathroom directly across from here. You'll find makeup and all that stuff in there. There's a closet as well. Find something that fits. We're going to be late to work, but that's a doctor's privilege. Sure, I agreed. I walked back through the bedroom and found the other bathroom. The cabinet drawers were full of unopened new packages of mascara, blush, and lipstick. A bathroom full of women's makeup. How strange. It made me wonder how long he'd been planning to bring me home. I wasn't naive enough to believe that I was the first woman he'd slept with, but did he make a habit of sleeping with his assistants? And what about his promise of a ring? I opened the closet door. The walk-in closet was filled with women's clothes in all different sizes. One section consisted entirely of women's medical uniforms. Find something you like? He asked. I jumped. You startled me, I said. I'm sorry, Michael apologized. He was wearing his doctor's uniform. He brushed by me and pulled out an assistant's uniform, one that was just like mine. How's this? He asked, handing it to me. I checked the tag for the size. It was perfect. How did you know? I asked. I have a good eye for that sort of thing. You better hurry. When I went downstairs, Michael handed me half of a bagel. He hustled me out the door. We'll get coffee at the office, he said. Driving to work, I wondered if anyone would notice that we would drive up in the same car. Do you want to drop me off about a block away? And I'll walk from there? I asked. Why? Michael shook his head. Keeping this kind of secret will be impossible. Jocelyn, everybody knows that I've been dating you. It won't come as a surprise that we're sleeping together. I cringed. Evie says, I began. Evie talks too much. Michael's face contorted in anger. Then just as suddenly he broke out in a grin. I never dated her. I think she's jealous. I shrugged my shoulders. Maybe so. Look, don't worry what other people think. He lifted my hand up to his lips and kissed it. You're mine now. I settled back in the seat. I wanted to belong to a man, to give myself to him totally. It had been over 2 years since I'd broken an engagement with the man that I thought I'd love forever, but I was over him and I was ready for another commitment. Michael seemed like the right man for me. When we pulled into the parking lot, Evie was just getting out of her car. Good morning, Evie, Michael said. Looks like we're all a little late this morning. Evie shot me a dirty look. Go up to the office, Michael told me. Okay, before I got to the stairwell, I heard Michael yelling. I ran up the stairs, afraid to hear what he was saying. What's the matter with you? Mavis, the office manager, asked me. I'm out of breath, I replied. I'm late. It's all right, she said. Dr. Garner's not in yet. Michael must have come in the back way, but Evie came in the front door, looking shaken. What's wrong? Mavis asked. Ask her, Evie replied, motioning to me. I don't have anything to do with whatever happened, I said. Well, you just got me fired, Evie said. I'm supposed to get my things and leave. Oh, I get it. Both you and Dr. Garner were late, Mavis said. Why didn't I see it before? Sorry, Evie. He's the boss. Then she turned to me. Obviously, you're his new victim. Well, it wouldn't be the first time or the last. What's that supposed to mean? I asked. Honey, I've already said too much, Mavis told me. You'd better get back to your station. You do still have a station, right? She asked. Yes, I said. Evie was in the back office, slamming her personal belongings into the box. Well, Cinderella, you think you're so special. You think he's Prince Charming, but he isn't. I can't help it if you're jealous because Michael wouldn't date you, I told her. Oh, it's Michael now, is it? I wouldn't date him because I knew about Amy. Amy? Who's Amy? I wondered if Michael had a child that he hadn't told me about. Evie laughed. She leaned toward me. Ask him, she hissed. Michael turned the corner. Out, now, he yelled at Evie. She disappeared down the hall. Don't listen to her, Jocelyn. She's just angry with me. He looked around at the other assistants who were stunned. We have patients waiting, he snapped. Mornings were always busy in the office. Michael went out for lunch but returned later. I have something for you. He handed me a little velvet box. Instead of the diamond ring I'd been expecting, the ring was an emerald. I hope I got the right size, Michael said. Let's see. He put the ring on my right hand. It fit exactly. What do you think? I thought it would be perfect for you. I looked at him, but I thought, I stammered. What? He said innocently. Michael, I thought that you were going to buy me an engagement ring. Otherwise you wouldn't have slept with me? He laughed. Darling, you are most amazingly provincial. But, I faltered. Michael enveloped me in his arms, and I love you for it. He reached in his pocket for another box. I also bought something else. I think this is the one that you're looking for. I took the box from his hand and opened it hesitantly. Inside there was a perfect diamond. Michael took the ring out and slipped it on the third finger of my left hand. It was a perfect fit as well. Will you marry me? Michael asked. Yes, I whispered. That's the word I wanted to hear. Michael kissed me and held me. Finally, he released me. We'd better stop this or we'll really have everybody talking. I laughed and held out both hands. Michael, they're lovely. You'll need to get your nails done now, he suggested. Ashamed, I hid my nails under my hands so they didn't show. He kissed me on the cheek. I'll take you by your place to get your things. You'll stay with me now, he told me. What about my apartment? I signed a lease, I said. Would you really prefer to live in an apartment when you could live with me? He asked. No, I admitted. I'm sure you can find somebody to sublease it from you. See you later. Before I knew it, Michael and I were pulling up to his house in his fancy car. I'd just brought some clothes. Everything that I owned had seemed shabby compared to Michael's house. Walking in, I felt as though I were walking into a new life, out of poverty and into luxury. The first shock came when Michael walked through the door. He'd just started up the stairs when I heard a female voice. Michael, is that you? She called. Michael looked surprised. Oops, I forgot to tell her that you were coming. He smiled. Amy, where are you? In the kitchen, she said. Come on, Michael said. We'll get it over with right now. Then he grabbed me and pulled me down the hall. A woman stood there chopping vegetables. Amy, I want you to meet Jocelyn, Michael told her. Amy's eyes widened when she saw me, but she recovered quickly. Pleased to meet you, she held out her hand to me. My pleasure, I responded, taking her hand. She squeezed my hand so hard that I almost cried out in pain. Amy, let go. Sorry, sometimes I don't even know my own strength. Jocelyn is living here now, Michael informed Amy coldly. You will get along with her. As you wish, Amy answered. Do you like chicken cordon bleu? She asked me. Yes, I said. I hope it's no trouble. No trouble at all, Amy replied. Dr. Garner always has me cook extra for guests. Dinner will be served in half an hour. Her tone implied that we'd better not be late. Michael turned to me. Let's take your things upstairs. So Amy's the housekeeper? I asked. Yes. She sounds like a drill sergeant, I giggled. Michael laughed. Her dad was in the Navy. Don't let her bother you, though. Her bark is worse than her bite. She certainly isn't a dog, I thought. I wondered if looking like a cover girl had been part of her job description. She was beautiful enough to have been a model or a high-priced hooker. How long has she been with you? I asked. Ever since I bought the house. I couldn't take care of it all by myself, he informed me. I wondered if Amy had provided other services besides just the cleaning and cooking. At dinner, he ignored her while she served the food. She, in turn, was respectful and addressed him only as Dr. Garner. How does Las Vegas this weekend sound? He asked. I smiled. It sounds like fun. Do you like gambling? Not really, Michael said, but I will take a gamble on you. I know of a beautiful wedding chapel there. This weekend? So soon? I was shocked. You do want to get married, don't you? He asked. Yes, of course, I told him. We've made the decision. Why wait? His tone was confident. No reason, I guess. My head spun. May I ask my sister to come with us? She's the only family I have since my parents died. Okay, Michael said. You'll have to sign a prenuptial agreement, of course. I'll have my lawyer draw one up. And there are several rules that I'll ask you to follow now that we're together. Really? I was more than a little surprised. The first is that you will remain faithful to me. That's for obvious reasons. Two, you won't spend more than $100 without my permission. I prefer to give gifts, and I enjoy seeing you wearing the things that I pick out for you. The third thing is that Fridays are my day off, and I'll spend them as I wish. Sometimes I golf, sometimes I go fishing with my friends, and sometimes I just stay home. You can do whatever shopping you want, but you can't be here on Fridays until 5 o'clock. I realize that it sounds a little unusual, but I really need some time to myself. Just then, Amy came in to serve dessert. A sly smile crossed her face when she looked at me. It was obvious that she knew something that I didn't. Everything was happening so fast. Michael and I would marry, no matter what. The sooner, the better. Unfortunately, my sister Angie couldn't come to the wedding. My niece had strep throat, and she couldn't leave her. "I haven't even met Michael yet," she protested. "Are you sure that you're doing the right thing?" "He's Mr. Wonderful, Angie. He's rich, he's handsome, and he's the answer to all of my dreams. I couldn't ask for anything more," I insisted. "You're my only sister, and I won't even see you become a bride," Angie lamented. "Do you understand why I can't come?" "Of course," I told her. "I hope she feels better soon." "Good luck," she told me. "Take lots of pictures." "I will," I promised. We left that Friday night after work. Michael insisted on taking a limousine to the local airport. The driver was a surly, nasty man. "Don't pay any attention to Joe," Michael advised when the man scowled at us. "Why do you put up with him?" I asked. "He's a friend of Amy's," Michael said, as if that explained everything. I liked the pilot of the private plane much better. Warren came back to the passenger area and smiled as he welcomed us aboard. "We'll be underway in just a few minutes," he told us. "Make yourself at home." I settled into a big leather seat next to Michael. "Didn't you want to invite some friends as witnesses?" "No," he answered, "and truthfully, I'm not sorry that your sister can't come. I want you all to myself. It's our honeymoon, after all." "Care for some champagne?" I giggled. "Sure." Las Vegas with Michael was like a fairyland. We hit the big boutiques first, buying wedding clothes, shoes, and a wedding ring for me. Michael said he didn't want a wedding ring for himself. "That's not my style," he informed me abruptly. We met Michael's lawyer at the wedding chapel. He had the papers for the prenuptial agreement. "The next time you get married, let me know a little sooner. I had to rush to get these done," he said. Michael frowned at him. "That's your job." Then Michael turned to me. "The papers say that I'll have to give you 10% of my earnings during our marriage, since this is a community property state." I vaguely remembered that a community property state meant I was entitled to half of whatever he earned, but I signed the papers without reading them. After all, I trusted Michael. He said that he loved me. Why would he try to cheat me? At the wedding chapel, I got a shock when I saw Michael write down the number 3 in the space provided for the number of previous marriages. When I mentioned it, he just smiled. "The 4th time's the charm, right, sweetheart?" he asked. I wondered what had happened with his other marriages. I felt that Michael would have asked me about previous marriages, if there'd been any. Yet I was caught up in the moment, and I didn't give it too much thought. The ceremony itself was nothing special. The minister intoned all of the standard words. We barely had time to get congratulations from our rented witnesses and take a formal photograph before we were out the door. Well, no matter, I thought. We were legally wed, and that's what I wanted. Michael had chosen a honeymoon suite at one of the most expensive hotels. We went shopping in some lovely boutiques, had dinner in swank restaurants, and saw several live shows. Once we got back home, we settled into a routine. We had an easy relationship. He loved to give me gifts, and I loved receiving them. I didn't mind being out of the house on Fridays. Usually I worked at the office. Michael had ordered Mavis to give me some additional responsibilities, so I had things to do there when he had his days off. Slowly, though, things began to change between us. Michael seemed distant and restless. My attempts to interest him in doing anything different together fell upon deaf ears. Our sex life became boring. One day I saw an advertisement for sexy lingerie and ordered a catalog. Finally, I decided on a short red satin nightgown. The night it arrived, I wore it in the bedroom. When Michael came in, I strutted around trying to act like a fashion model. I hoped that I looked sexy. "What's this?" he asked. "I just thought we could try something different," I replied. "Jocelyn, you're my wife," Michael told me. "I know that, darling," I said, "but there's no rule that says that we have to make love the same way every time." "No," Michael agreed, "but I like the pale blue nightgown that you wear. I make love to my wife the way you're supposed to make love, not in some kinky fashion." "It was just an idea. I'm sorry I brought it up," I apologized. When we got into bed, Michael turned away from me and fell asleep. The next night, I wore the blue nightgown and we made love. At least he made love the same way that he always had. I was his wife and I got the standard treatment. I wondered if his other wives had gotten tired of Michael's lovemaking. A few days later, I felt ill. The flu had been going around, and although I'd gotten a flu shot, I felt feverish. About 3 o'clock, I decided what I really needed was bed rest at home. I knew that it was Friday because Michael wasn't in the office. It was only 3 o'clock. Michael's car was parked in the garage when I got home. If I was quiet, I figured he wouldn't notice me. As I came up the stairs, I heard weird sounds coming from the bedroom. I pushed open the door a bit. Michael and Amy lay together on the bed. Amy was on top of him, obviously enjoying herself. They were so engrossed in their activity, they didn't see me. I ran, jumped into my car, and drove to Angie's house, sobbing all the way. "I can't believe it," I cried. "Jocelyn, you wouldn't be the first woman whose husband has cheated on her," she said soothingly. I know that. I won't even claim that I didn't think they might have something going on. But why would he let Amy do things like that with him and not me? Maybe he's more restrained and respectful with you because you're his wife. You know, that good woman versus bad woman thing? That's really showing respect. Sleeping with another woman? I snapped. I didn't say that it was right. "Look, go lie down and I'll bring you some tea," she offered. "Thanks, Angie," I said. I spent the night at Angie's house. Michael didn't call. I knew that he probably wouldn't remember my sister's name, so he wouldn't be able to find her number. I didn't go back to work until Monday. Michael called me into his office and told me he was disappointed in me. "You're the one who's been sleeping around, and you're disappointed in me?" I asked, incredulous. "So it was you. I thought I heard somebody," he muttered. "Just how long has this affair been going on?" I demanded. "It's none of your business," he said tersely. "Michael, it is my business. You promised to be faithful to me," I reminded him. "No, I never did," he told me. "It's in the wedding vows, or don't you remember?" I shook my head in disgust. Michael came around the desk and shook his finger under my nose. "Look, I told you before we got married about Fridays. If you don't like it, you can get out." "Well, I guess this is goodbye, then. I'll find a lawyer. You'll hear from him, I assured him. Goodbye, Michael said. A few months later, I was working for another doctor. My lawyer, Artie Haynes, discovered right away that there were problems with the prenuptial agreement. Jocelyn, this document isn't worth the paper that it's written on, Artie told me happily. We can take Michael Garner to the cleaners. I don't want to take him to the cleaners, Artie. I just want a divorce. One day, Michael showed up at my office. I was not happy to see him. Look, Michael, I said, I finally developed a backbone, and I'm not going to let you treat me like dirt. Michael realized that everyone in the office was watching us. Can't we talk someplace more private? He asked. No, I'm busy, I said. The lawyers were taking care of the divorce. My lawyer has told me not to talk to you. Jocelyn, honestly, I didn't come here to talk about lawyers. He looked at the floor. I came to talk about a reconciliation. You still have to talk to my lawyer, I told him firmly. Even if I want a date? He grinned. Yes. The phone rang. Excuse me. I picked up the phone and dealt with the patient as Michael left. Artie called me at my apartment that night. He told me Michael wanted reconciliation. He also told me Michael was paying alimony to several women. I told him I didn't care. I don't want alimony. I want out. When I think of him and Amy together, I get so angry that I wish he were dead, I confessed. Jocelyn, that isn't a good thing to say. What if something suspicious happened to him? You could be a suspect, he informed me. You worry too much. I'm sure that I'm not the only woman who would like to wring her husband's neck. Besides, nothing's going to happen to Michael. I wouldn't count on it. I've seen too many divorces go bad. Listen, we can continue with the divorce, or we can put it on hold for now, he said. Go ahead and file the papers, I told him. Michael had other ideas, though. He left messages on my answering machine, sent me flowers, and waited for me in the parking lot of the office building. I told him that I wanted him to leave me alone. I fired Amy, he shouted. Well, then it sounds like Amy has grounds for a lawsuit, I yelled back. Sexual harassment? Then I raced home and took the phone off the hook. There was a part of me, though, that wondered if Michael had really changed his ways. I had been so stupid. Why hadn't I waited until I'd known him better? I suppose that it had been greed. It wasn't easy to look at yourself and see the ugly side of your character. I had wanted to be married to a doctor and to have nice things, but I'd also needed to be loved and cherished by one man for my whole life. It was hard to walk away from that need. Oh, be quiet, I told the part of me that wanted to give Michael another chance. Then I made myself some tea, sat in front of the television, and watched old movies for the rest of the evening. The next day, a huge bouquet was waiting for me at the office. It's your birthday soon, the card read. How about Le Bistro? He remembered, I sighed. My favorite flowers and my favorite restaurant. All day long I thought about Michael, our relationship, and about the chance of reconciliation. If he'd really changed, didn't I owe him another chance? Michael was waiting for me in the parking lot. Did you get the flowers I sent? He asked. Yes, thank you, I told him. How about going out this Saturday night to celebrate your birthday? He asked. Maybe. There was no need to give in right away. It was Friday before I would agree to go out with him. But you can forget about me sleeping with you, I warned him. I won't make any moves until you're ready, Michael promised. Saturday night came and we ate at Le Bistro. We watched the sunset from a window table as we ate our meal. Jocelyn, I apologize for what I've done to you, Michael said softly. I promise that it will never happen again. Let's be happy in the moment, I suggested. If I think too hard, I'll have to remember how hurt I am, so I'm not thinking about it. Considering what came next, I should have been thinking long and hard. In fact, I should have skipped dinner altogether. Instead, I had an experience that changed my whole life. Michael drove along the highway toward home. The road twisted and turned, and Michael navigated the turns fast and wide. I asked him to slow down, but he ignored me. Suddenly, he pulled off the road. On my side of the car, there was a steep drop. I pulled my eyes away from the edge to look at Michael. Why did you drive so fast? I asked nervously. Michael never got a chance to answer. A man dressed in black and wearing a ski mask ran toward us. I screamed as the man jerked Michael's door open and shot him. Then he pointed the gun at me. I pushed open the car door and threw myself off the side of the hill. The ground was rocky as I tumbled down. The man swore and bullets hit the rocks near me. I rolled into some brush and crawled behind a rock for cover. Finally, the shooting stopped. My whole body ached. I got him, I heard a man yell. What about her? A woman asked. She got away. The woman swore. Dump the car, she ordered. After a moment, I saw the car fall down the cliff straight at me. I had no choice but to get up and run. I ran as quickly as I could, my arms and legs being torn by the brush. My heels came off, but I kept running. I crouched down, shivering. I was prepared to spend the night in my evening dress and light wrap. I crawled into a shallow hole and covered myself with leaves. In the morning, I continued down the canyon. It seemed to take forever to get down. Ma'am, can you tell us your name? A young emergency medical technician asked. Jocelyn, I said. Jocelyn Garner. Mrs. Garner, do you know how you got here? Then everything started swimming again, and I must have passed out. Mercifully, when I woke up, I was in a hospital room. Two detectives came in the room. Mrs. Garner, I'm sorry, but we have to ask you some questions, one man said. He introduced himself as Detective Wilson. Can you tell us what happened? I told them everything that I could remember. Do you know where your husband is now? Detective Wilson asked. He was still in the car when I went over the cliff, I replied. Detective Wilson glanced at the other man. The other man introduced himself as Detective Murphy. Was your husband alive? He asked. My throat swelled up. I don't think so. Are you sure that the shooter was a man? Yes, I heard him talking to a woman, I told him. So you jumped, then he shot at you? Detective Wilson made notes. Yes, I said. Detective Wilson took Michael's name, our address, and the address of Michael's office. Do you know of anyone who might want to kill you or your husband? Mrs. Garner, he asked grimly. No, I can't imagine who. My head hurt as I tried to think. Oh, you know, we did have a housekeeper. My husband fired her. Why? He looked at me intently. Well, you see, my husband and I were separated because I couldn't finish the sentence. He was having an affair with her? Detective Wilson's eyes pierced through me. I nodded. I suppose that kind of interrogation was routine, but I found it extremely humiliating. Not only was my husband dead, but suddenly everyone would know that he'd been unfaithful to me. What's the housekeeper's name? Wilson asked. Amy Smith. She might have been the woman I heard, but I'm not sure. Do you know where we can find Miss Smith? He was writing notes again. I shook my head. Okay, Mrs. Garner, we'll be back. Don't leave town. With my injuries, I don't think I'll be traveling far, I told him. Detective Wilson smiled slightly, then they both left. Even though the bullet had only grazed me, I'd lost a lot of blood. The doctors insisted I stay in the hospital for several days. Detective Wilson came back that evening to let me know that the car had been found with a body inside. We assume that it's your husband, he said. Mrs. Garner, so far your story checks out. We know the motive wasn't robbery. That leads us to believe that the shooting was personal. Oh, no. I covered my face with my hands. Detective Murphy thinks that you might have murdered your husband and then made it look as though someone tried to kill you. My mouth dropped open. Why would I do that? I asked, shocked. Revenge comes to mind. You knew that he was going to divorce you. My husband was talking about a reconciliation. Besides, why would I hurt myself? I simply didn't understand what he was getting at. Detective Wilson smirked. What about having him killed, hiring someone? I threw up my hands in disgust. I give up. I won't even dignify that with an answer. All right, then. We're done for now. I understood why the police might have thought I'd killed Michael. They didn't know me, but I knew that I wasn't guilty. I also knew that Amy couldn't have been the murderer. The shooter had definitely been a man. Someone had murdered Michael, and the police weren't looking for the real killer. All of a sudden, the enormity of the recent events in my life hit me. Michael was dead. No matter what would have happened in our relationship, our marriage was over. I buried my head in the pillow and cried. I knew that what I needed most was rest. I went straight to Angie's house after. They still haven't found Amy, Angie asked. No, I told her. Jocelyn, if she had anything to do with Michael's death, she's probably out of the country by now. Several days later, the detectives came to see me. Detective Murphy started the questioning. Mrs. Garner, several of your co-workers have told us that you were quite angry with your husband. One said that she heard you wish that he were dead. Me and my big mouth, I thought. I was angry with Michael, I said. I won't deny that. That gives you a motive. Well, I didn't kill Michael, and I didn't have him killed, I protested. You've got to see how it looks. You were angry enough to threaten him, and now he's dead. Have you talked to Amy Smith? I asked. We haven't been able to find her. It happened too quickly, I explained. It's not unusual for someone to make up an assistant in order to divert suspicion. I'm not making up anything, I shouted. All we have is your word. It's not my job to make your job easier. Mrs. Garner, we've talked to your husband's lawyer. He said that Dr. Garner didn't fire the housekeeper. In fact, the lawyer believes that you were the most likely person to want your husband dead. I blinked back tears of frustration. All I know is what Michael told me. He swore to me that he'd fired Amy. Mrs. Garner, we also talked with your lawyer. He explained about the bad prenuptial agreement. Now I think that would tend to exonerate you in his death. My partner, though, disagrees. The tears finally came. It's the truth. Detective Murphy glanced at Detective Wilson. I think that's all for today. Bright and early the next morning, the detectives were back. We finally got the report on the insurance coverage, Detective Wilson said immediately. Did you know that your husband took out a life insurance policy on you? My mouth dropped open. What? We weren't even together for a month. I thought for a moment. Oh, that's right. Last month was when he started asking if we could get back together. You both were insured for $6 million. It would make sense if he insured himself, I said. You were his wife. We were separated a few months ago. Why would he take out a policy on me if we were separated? Why, indeed? Detective Wilson gave me a moment to reach the same conclusion. Detective, I know my husband. Michael wouldn't hire someone to kill me. Okay, this is my theory. I think he did. Maybe this reconciliation that your husband wanted was really an attempt to lure you into a setup. But I'm not dead. Michael is. Right, I think it was a double cross. Your husband wanted to kill you, and he hired someone as the hit man. That's where the twist comes. The hit man wanted your husband dead, so he shot him first. Unfortunately for the hit man, you got away, but you said you can't identify him. So he might go free. Oh, my head was spinning. Of course, there's Detective Murphy's theory. He thinks you shot your husband, pushed the car down the ravine, then shot yourself. And what did I do with the gun? You threw it into the ravine. I sighed. Luckily for you, Detective Wilson likes your story. There's no need to go down to the station, I assured him. Why can't you find Amy? The neighbors don't know her. Apparently, she didn't have any family or friends. Oh, I remember Michael telling me about one of her friends. He was a rather unpleasant fellow. What was his name? Joe. But only because Joe was a friend of Amy's that he hired the man occasionally. No last name? No, Michael never mentioned his last name. I can probably identify him if you have a picture, I offered. Let's go down to the station. At the station, Murphy placed a tall stack of books in front of me, mug shots. Don't you have them on a computer? I thought that maybe you could search the database. With our budget, lady, you've been watching too much TV. I leafed through the pages. There were some men who looked like Joe, but no one who looked exactly like him. Wilson came by with two cups of coffee. Thanks. I don't know if you like cream or sugar. Black is fine. How are you doing? So far, nothing. I confessed. I have more books. I shrugged my shoulders. Detective Wilson smiled. Let me see if I can find a sketch artist. If you can describe Joe, we can send it to the other police stations in town. Why didn't you start with the sketch artist first? Maybe I needed to see that you were sincere. Always testing, I mused. Sorry. After meeting with the sketch artist, I decided to call Michael's lawyer and ask permission to get the clothes that I'd left behind. Have you heard from Amy? No, she seems to have disappeared. You liked her? I asked. She was very faithful to Michael. Maybe not faithful in the way that you would imagine, but faithful nonetheless. And Michael didn't fire her? I'm sorry, no, he didn't fire her. They had a strange relationship. I think they loved each other. If that's love, I don't want any part of it. The lawyer smiled at me. You're very young and naive. Are you almost done? Yes, I told him. We walked out and the lawyer locked the door. I've got to run, he said. He zipped off. There was no time to call the police. I turned around and followed Amy. She pulled into Michael's driveway and stopped at the curb. We wouldn't be here if you hadn't been so stupid, Joe. Amy berated the man as they got out of the car. I had to do it, Joe insisted. You were supposed to kill her, not Kill her, not him, you idiot, Amy snapped. I was trying to get both of them. Well, you missed her, Amy reminded him, and now I have to leave the country. I don't see why we have to leave now, he whined. What do you mean by that? Sweetheart, I did it for us. There's no us anymore. I felt sick to my stomach. I wanted Michael dead first, Joe said angrily. I didn't want his hands touching you again. Well, maybe I liked his hands touching me. But you said that you loved me. It sounded like he was about to cry. Maybe I loved him too. No, you love me, he cried. I wanted to marry Michael, Amy hissed. No, Joe screamed. Then, before I knew what was happening, he pulled a gun out and shot Amy in the chest. I ran to Amy and lifted her head off the concrete pavement. A neighbor came out to see what was happening. I'll call for help, the man said. Amy coughed, and there was blood. I couldn't believe that she sounded, I didn't think he had it in him. I couldn't believe that she sounded almost proud of him. Don't talk, I told her. Michael loved me, you know. I don't know why he kept marrying other people. He was so stupid. She got an evil glint in her eye. He told me that he'd never thought about killing you, not until you said that you wished he were dead. Hot tears ran down my face. The police put out an all-points bulletin on Joe. They found him. Amy recovered in the jail. When she was well enough, she stood trial for conspiracy to commit murder. I hoped that there would be a next time. One thing that was certain, though, if I were lucky enough to find somebody to love again, I would insist on a very long engagement. No more tests, the detective told me. Good, I'd like that, I told him. Suddenly, I couldn't wait to see Detective Wilson again. I knew in my heart that he was going to be someone very important in my future. Okay, that is the end of that story. This is going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. This has been Volunteer Genios for Sun Sounds. Thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.